Tonight, Pretty Late Pal Brandon C. Price rides sidecar as we rock out with Molehill for New Music Monday. Then, Rich Lenkoff has a legal breakdown of the Jackie Robinson West lawsuit. But first, Todd Belcour reacts to the passing of Justice Scalia. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Hello. Craig, you did not tell me there was going to be snow when we last spoke. I was in Texas. It was 75 degrees, absolutely gorgeous. I was drinking a margarita on the Riverwalk, enjoying the moonlight. And I have to say, I love my city. It was very hard.
A little sad.
It was very hard for me to board that plane this morning.
Tomorrow there may be snow.
Okay, I gotta go. I gotta go.
Just so you know.
Texas is an interesting place. Rob Martier, Esmeralda, either one of you ever had the pleasure of visiting Texas?
Many times.
Nope.
No for Esmeralda.
Nope.
Many times. Many times. Yes. Why many times?
My mom used to live in Dallas.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are you, is it a comfortable place for you to visit?
Yeah, it's sprawling.
Yes,
you know it's.
It
I mean, even in the Dallas Metroplex area, you've got to drive everywhere.
You have to. Yes, there is very little walking. I actually walked a lot. I am training for the Fight for Air Climb, and my hotel was only four stories, so I actually ended up sneaking into hotels, including the Marriott, the Hyatt, the Hilton, and the Drury Inn and Suites, to use their stairwells while I was there. But here's the thing. I think my favorite moment, I had two favorite moments last week. I was at a Denny's late night enjoying some cinnamon pancakes and maybe some eggs over easy. A little late night Denny's fare with a lot of alcoholics around me, a lot of drunks enjoying themselves as well. But the busboy came over and he said, "Are you in town with the rodeo?" Which would be the weirdest thing to hear in Chicago. It's kind of flattering in Texas. I was like, I look like I would be in the rodeo. I could do some barrel racing. You don't know. It's a different lifestyle, I'm saying, Rob, down there. Different pace.
It is indeed.
So yesterday I was on the elevator and a guy turned to me and he asked me if I was in town for the Asian festival. And I said, no, I'm here with the rodeo.
Nice.
I didn't know what else to say. Esmeralda, do you, I mean, because we, you and I, when we're in different, depending on where we are or the people we're around, are you often asked what you are? Or feel like a little bit different?
No, because I feel like people just assume
that you're Latina,
right?
Oh, see, I think they're trying to figure me out. Is all. So that's why I get asked the Asian questions. You've never been asked.
Yeah, well,
Filipino. You've gotten Filipino.
No, I've only. You know what? This is really bad. But I was at a 7-Eleven, and the guy behind the counter was Indian, and he asked me if I was Indian. And I'm like, no. Nope.
Was he mad?
No, he was just like, oh, okay.
Okay.
I'm like, yeah, sorry.
I've been mistaken for Italian. She got very mad at me, Craig. She got very mad at me.
Why didn't she get mad for being Italian?
That I wasn't Italian.
Oh, okay, good.
I was at a bakery up in Harwood Heights.
What were you ordering?
A cannoli.
Okay. Just one cannoli?
Maybe six cannolis.
Yeah. And, can I get a cannoli?
The World Cup was on, and she was cheering for Italy. And she turned to me, and because she was very excited about them scoring a goal. And she goes, you're Italian? And I said no. I said, no, I'm Mexican. Oh! And she was very upset with
me. Wow.
Yeah. I feel like I paid more for my cannoli than I should have.
You're very interesting, ambiguous. You're not really sure. You get everything.
I do get everything.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Greek? If I get Greek?
I never get misunderstood. I'm always Italian or not even asked.
Not knowing.
I never get, like, what are you? That never happens to me.
Mm. People speak Spanish. Oh, that was my favorite moment. Did anyone see any of the primary debate on Saturday when Marco Rubio tried to be more Latino than Ted Cruz? I've been meaning to ask you to pull this clip, Craig, if you had a chance tonight.
You mean the dueling Spanish?
By the way, Ted Cruz whipped out some of the most embarrassing Spanish. It was the kind of Spanish I would speak that would get me beaten up in Pilsen, is all I'm saying. It was, what was he like? Quiero decir el mismo. I don't even know what he said. It was Esmeralda. Do you speak Spanish fluently?
I do, yes.
Have you seen this clip?
I heard it, but they were kind of yelling over each other.
They were. Yeah.
But I kind of heard him. It was something like, I want to say it almost sounded like, say it to my face.
It was
like he was trying to be like that. And it was like, all right, buddy.
It was a little bit. Well, it was a weird way to go, right? To be the only two Latinos in the race, and to go, well, how does he know? He doesn't even speak Spanish. it was just an odd and unfortunate moment.
He knows what I said on Univision because he doesn't speak Spanish. And second of all, the other point that I would make.
Marco, si quieres, díselo ahora mismo, díselo ahora. En español, si quieres.
This is a disturbing pattern now.
Say it right now in Spanish if you want to. Spanish if you want to, right?
So it was. It was like, say it to my face. Do it. And then you hear the people in the background going like, oh.
Yes, Rob.
Well, and the setup to that, too, is if you rewind a little bit, it was Ted Cruz talking about something that Rubio had said on Univision.
Right.
And then, of course, you heard Rubio saying, well, how would you even know? You don't even speak Spanish. And then the throwdown was on. Go get it, boys. I love it.
No, it's fine. It's just a weird I'm more Latino than you moment. And then Trump went after Bush for his brother, because Jeb was saying that his brother kept America safe, and then Trump said, yeah, but the trade centers came down, the World Trade Center came down. What a weird moment, because that's never been a Republican argument that we kept America safe, right? It's never been, but the towers came down. You've never heard, I don't think I've ever heard a candidate on the Republican side say, except George Bush let us down. Have you heard that, Rob?
No.
I was watching, I was like, am I hearing correctly? And then everybody, of course, the big news this weekend was talking about the passing of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, and whether or not President Obama has a responsibility to name a nominee. And during that debate, Trump said delay, delay, delay. Rubio said that he said lame duck presidency, you can't name one. And like, everybody was coming up with reasons why President Obama should not name a replacement. Now, Rob, I'm just curious, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. He has, regardless of whether or not you think he's in lame duck mode right now, he still is the president. Mm-hmm. And he does have an absolute constitutional obligation to go ahead and name a successor for Justice Scalia. Now, on the flip side of that, the Republican-controlled Senate, certainly it's well within their province to go ahead and fight whatever nominee he throws up if they don't see that, if they don't feel as though it's worthy of that seat.
As so. It would be expected in any situation.
Right. Right. It's highly political, which we all know.
Yeah. So. Well, here's the thing is that Mitch McConnell said that the American people should have a say. Was that that was his statement? The American people should have a say. But they did when they elected President Barack Obama.
Which is a ridiculous argument anyway, and the response is even more ridiculous as well. The fact of the matter is that President Obama is the president right now.
Yes.
And his job calls for this action.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, if the roles were reversed, the exact same thing would be happening. If it were a Republican president, a Democratic-controlled Senate, and the exact same situation played out, it would be the exact same thing.
But, can I ask you something?
Yeah.
When that comes up, and Steve Cochran mentioned that this morning, and?
Yeah.
Just and. So if it was Democrats that were controlling the Congress, and I mean, like, so then.
No, what I'm saying is that we do this thing where, and both sides do it. They say, well, they're politicizing this. Well, let's just take off the table for one moment let's just understand that everything in Washington is politicized. You cannot go to the bathroom without it being politicized.
Ooh.
Everything is politicized in Washington, and that's the way it is, and that's the way it's always going to be.
No, that's what's scary about that point that Rob just made is why Donald Trump has a chance to become president of the United States, because the American people do recognize to some extent that nothing gets done because everything is politics, politics, politics. And then a guy runs on a campaign, I'm crazy and I'll say whatever and I'm not a politician.
And he said he's not a politician, and yet he said the tactic should be right now, delay, delay, delay.
Right, exactly.
How is that not being as complicated and as troublesome as what's going on right now? I'm just saying, if you think
we're all screwed.
Yes.
Sorry.
More after this on 720 WGN. We're welcoming into the studio attorney, actually also associate professor at Northwestern University. I'm sorry, Brandon. He's a professor at Northwestern. Todd Bellacore, and also one of our favorites. And also, we always appreciate his opinion, Brandon C. Price. More after this on 720 WGN. For listening pretty late, I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. So happy to be back from Texas and joined by some very good friends of mine in the studio. We have Todd Bellacore, and we also have Brandon C. Price. Todd, remind us again the organization that you are with.
Yes, I'm the co-founder of the Chicago International Social Change Film Festival. And it's an organization that uses film as a medium to inspire and educate people to act and solve some of the world's greatest issues.
And you're an associate professor at Northwestern Law?
Not associate. Every time I come, I get a...
Am I degrading? Am I demoting you?
No, an attempted promotion. I'm an adjunct professor. And
I've heard it both ways.
I'll be teaching
adjunct.
Hold on,
let me write that down. Adjunct.
Yes,
that just seems demeaning.
No, it's a wonderful opportunity.
Be appreciative.
It is absolutely a wonderful opportunity for me to talk about policy advocacy and criminal justice reform, the new Jim Crow, with law students at different schools.
Well, you sound a little more well versed in law than myself and Brandon C. Price, who is the genius behind Vamp, you go ahead and do it.
A music comedy drinking show.
There it is. Music,
which is also very politicized, by the way.
Yeah. Politicized, sexualized, all of that.
Oh, yeah. Sex positive, policy positive. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets to say their opinions. We have a lot of good ones. But we just do it through music comedy instead of like actually changing things.
And you've just added an earlier show on Friday nights at MCO.
We did. It's the Comedy Cabaret. So if a little less raucous is your thing, a little more sultry cabaret, we did the second week last week, and it was really awesome. It's getting successful, and I'm very excited.
In all of your Vamp shows, has mm-hmm. Scalia... Justice Scalia ever come up?
He came up last weekend.
Before he passed away.
I called out a too soon.
This
was Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I called out a too soon on that. And also, I have some on one side, some on the other for me and my
meaning conservative and liberals. Yes.
Sorry, thank you.
Yes.
So it's sometimes with my very liberal audience, it's just easier to avoid things like that.
I didn't see a lot of, and now Todd, you're on Facebook and also expressing your thoughts. The news of the day. I didn't see many people getting mad at those who were relieved. I saw a lot of people who were maybe who had grown up gay in communities that were resistant to that lifestyle, kind of relieved that this seemed like a roadblock. This was a person who, for most of their life, seemed to be someone who threw up all the reasons to ignore gay rights. One of the things I had found a few years ago doing some research on something else was about the wrongfully imprisoned. That Justice Scalia had said that the mistakes that are made when it comes to wrongfully imprisoning someone and perhaps executing them was worth the price of justice. That's the cost that comes with. And that always seemed like a kind of a harsh judgment to me. What has been your take on the stances that Justice Scalia had taken in the past?
It's a tough context to even begin that conversation. I mean, I don't think many people agree with that. I think he certainly held some positions that a lot of people felt were uncomfortable at a minimum. But I think the reason why there wasn't just a roaring backlash against maybe some of the people who were really heartbroken over the loss of of their champion is because of some of the incendiary things he did say. But I think for people who can appreciate it from the academic aspect of it, the legal aspect of it, he's certainly an individual who had over 30 years of legal scholarship and undeniably had an impact on the world's most powerful court. And one of his famous quotes, in addition to some of the ones that are maybe less infamous more than famous, was the importance of being able to build bridges with individuals who you may ardently disagree with.
Right.
And that's in the context of something like Obama's civility speech in Springfield or something like that. It's important to try to hold those things up as we talk about now the political ramifications of what to do next.
Right. So that it's weird that it was in that same week when President Obama visited Springfield right here in Illinois. And Brandon, he gave this speech about what he sees as the future of American politics. Like right now, we've come to a place where we tear each other down rather than building each other up. That government is supposed to be there to do greater things. Mm-hmm. Todd, I'm not jealous at all that you had the opportunity to be in the room when he gave that speech.
If either in the room, you mean like across the street watching it on television.
Did you really? Absolutely. You didn't get to be in the, you weren't in the house?
No, absolutely not. I did my best to have some shameless pleas on Facebook and Twitter, leveraging the few networks I have, trying to get access, but I didn't.
You did not.
And some people were kind enough to give me programs and some of the other things so I could share with my family.
Well, one of the things, he did mention the Supreme Court. He mentioned the super PACs and Citizens United. And that was obviously something, his very first year, his very first State of the Union, the Supreme Court was right there in the front row, and he wagged his finger. He waved his fingers at that, his finger at them, and saying, that was a bad choice. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Justice Scalia was not at the last State of the Union address. Many of the conservative judges were not. Did you know that?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's become a common practice for people based on a disagreement with some of our leaders to not attend.
Right.
and he was that was an example.
Now, Justice Scalia was a Reagan appointee, somebody that people really look to as having the strongest, most conservative opinion on the courts. So what Mitch McConnell and I believe a lot of Republicans and conservatives are saying is that the next justice should be as close as possible to that sort of tone. Is that something you can...
Well, yeah. If I was Mitch McConnell, I'd say that too.
Yeah, exactly. We want the same guy. And by the way, join our conversation anytime. This, I really want to know what people think. And on either side of this, do you really believe that President Obama has the authority and the right and is constitutionally mandated to nominate somebody to replace the you know the empty slot to fill that gap in the Supreme Court? Give us a call. If you think that it should be the next president of the United States, that we should wait, give us a call and let us know why. 312-981-7200, because someone keeps calling and hanging up. They're not quite sure. This is a this is a safe zone. This is a conversation. We don't yell at each other. We don't demean each other. This is really just to hear why you think that. I think that the president of the United States should do his job.
It's his job. That's exactly the phrase you need to use.
It's his job.
Well, I think it's also worth noting that while people like Mitch McConnell did say we should wait, that's not an uncommon posture for people who are holding whatever opposition to whoever the current president is.
Right.
Senator Schumer, in a similar situation in 2007, advocated for or waiting on the appointment of Supreme Court justices should a Justice Stevens or Justice Ginsburg pass. So,
and Stevens and Ginsburg are like, what? I'm still here.
I'm okay.
What are you doing?
Like, you're on the short list of seeing Jesus.
What do you
We're
know
playing
that
the
I
odds,
don't know?
Guys.
What's happening?
So the bottom line is, I think your producer may have mentioned this earlier, that this is just, there's nothing new under the sun. No matter who holds the political power, there's still a game that will be played. There still will be a chip that will be played given the position that the people have.
Well, go ahead, Brandon.
I was just going to ask you this. So if I'm a Republican and I absolutely shut down any nominee that President Obama puts forward, now we're in a 4-4. Now, barely anything is going to go through. But if you look, and I could be wrong about this.
No. Here's the thing. No, what happens is the lower courts.
The lower courts, right?
Yes,
which are predominantly on the other. Like, isn't it the majority of them are almost on the other side?
It's all over the. It's all over the place. For the most part, they're mostly liberal courts, except for Texas, where I believe the.
Amen.
It's been except for Texas, where they will pretty much close all the abortion clinics if that lower court is standing halt.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. There's a lot of sniffing cases in the balance right now. And one of the options is, as opposed to having a 4-4 and having cases go back down to a lower court and be affirmed according to whatever they decided in that instance, they can have the cases re-argued.
Yeah. So, they can re-argue with stuff that they had already, had heard already, including cases that Scalia was sitting.
Well, the idea being you want to make sure that the courts have as much precedential value as possible. And you don't want to use the authority and time invested in the courts to just refer back to the lower court.
I see. Let me take a quick break here. We are talking about this, believe me, for the next half hour. We will get into this. Brandy, you won't sound like that because we all feel like, what's going on? And Christy will get to you as well. More after this on 720 WGN. That's Two Souls by Molehill. They're coming up after midnight for our Music Monday showcase. So we're very excited to have them in the studio. Right now we have Todd Belcour and Brandon C. Price. We are talking about the passing of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia and what that means for the future of the Supreme Court, what the political battle is that's unfolding in Washington. Brandy wanted to join the conversation. And Brandy, I assure you, you're absolutely fine. What do you want to say, Brandy?
Well, actually, hi, guys. And Patty, thank you for bringing all the politics just down to a common level. For,
conversation.
For little people like me.
Oh, me too, by the way. We're all just...
I'm curious to find out because I heard that the president's choice, no matter who it is, even if it's the most qualified person that there is, that it'll be vetoed, and then Craig informed me that the House would be the one to veto this. Why would he put the effort in if the choice is just going to be a null and void?
What do you think, Todd?
Well, I think it's worth mentioning that he's had more difficulty getting any of his nominations confirmed than any president in the history of history.
Not just for the Supreme Court, but any head of a department.
That's right. So I think it's fair that we expect him to do his constitutional duty of nominating someone he feels to be qualified to the court. Now, to your other question that's kind of embedded in that, even if he was to submit someone who's a strict textualist, which is what Scalia was, meaning like we believe the Constitution should be interpreted as it was interpreted back in its time. And
to the word.
The word should have the original meaning. I'm not even certain if he even proposed someone who had that sort of representation, you know, a Janice Rogers Brown, a Diane Sykes, if the Republicans would say yes, just because right now there's a political opportunity in opposing him, and you know they can get a lot of momentum on the other side relating to that by opposing him now.
Could there be any backdoor, like backroom dealing, and you know put this person up? Like people have been making jokes. People making jokes about maybe Biden, or you know people have been asking, can't Barack? Maybe Barack steps down and he becomes they would never appoint him to the Supreme Court. But could there be backroom dealings? I mean, I know that we talk a little bit about the experiences that we have in Springfield, but on a level, could there be an agreement between Mitch McConnell and a Paul? You know, any of those guys?
You know, I've spent some time trying to speak with some of the people I know are really attuned to the whole shortlist search. Is there a moderate individual that maybe a compromise candidate? And the idea is pretty clear out there that no matter who the president nominates, there's going to be strict opposition.
It seems so short-sighted. Go ahead, Brandon.
My question is this. So we know this. We know they're going to get shut down. They've come out and said it. So why doesn't Obama go for somebody, not only liberal, but someone that will make the Republicans look bad for shutting down? A person of color,
yes,
that people are behind.
Like, make why them not publicly say why they don't like them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you have the negotiation strategy of sorts. You have intentional efforts to float names like Eric Holder, who is very considered controversial, Loretta Lynch, who is very controversial in terms of, the general population's perception of the individual. And then you have someone like a Sri Srinivasan, who's an individual who's, internationally renowned legal scholar, who may eventually be the pick, who would be the first Asian American to serve in a Supreme Court and has already been confirmed for a position. So I think a lot of these individuals can pass some of those significant hurdles, and the floating of some of the more candidates that may be more, rise to a really negative action may allow a really easy pathway, or at least easier for a Sri Srinivasan or even like a Jane Kelly,
right,
who is a public defender for most of her life, who was confirmed unanimously not long ago for her new position.
Well, there you go, Brandy. Go ahead.
Do they have to say why they say no? Is it not just a vote? Do they have to give a reason why they would not elect somebody?
I think part of what they say and what they don't like about a candidate comes out in the type of questioning that they have, doesn't it?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the Senate does have a constitutional duty as well to advise and give consent to these sort of significant positions. So I think it's important for them to take that role seriously, no matter who the president is. And in the course of their questioning, you can kind of get a feel for what they're trying to get out of the individual.
Because they don't hide the tone. I mean, I used to watch some of these.
I'm excited to watch it.
Yes, I agree. I put it out there.
It's an energizing time in politics. I know a lot of young people who up to this point have been not interested at all. You know, honestly, myself included. I came from so many Republican states growing up that it didn't matter. But if your vote in Texas as a liberal means nothing. Right. So it's an exciting time.
Yeah, I'm with you, Brandy. Put it up and let us watch the drama unfold.
I'm 42 now, and I'm just now truly getting into politics and figuring it out and figuring out just what I think, and not what I think, but who I side with. And it is very interesting to me. It's very exciting. Thank you, Patty. You've done a lot for me, hon.
Oh, Brandy, you've done a lot for me, too. Have a wonderful evening. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thank you for your engagement and interest, Patty.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's Christy. Let's see. Christy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you all doing?
Very good. What are your thoughts on this?
I think this is just so outrageous. I can't even believe that this is really a topic of discussion, the fact that Republicans are saying that just because it's an election year coming up, that it should be held off. Because if a Republican was in office right now, you better believe they'd be switching their gears and saying, oh, no, this is our right. Our president should be electing somebody or choosing somebody, appointing somebody. And it just blows my mind that I'm so sick of this back and forth with politicians, and I don't know how they expect the Supreme Court to go without another justice for more than a year.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I asked Rob, because Rob said if it was a Democrat, you know, if it was a liberal judge who had died and a Republican president, that we would be like we'd all be screaming the different sides of this argument, right? But I don't understand how. Okay, that's fine, and perhaps that's true, and I'm sure that it is. But right now, let's deal with the facts of this situation. And to your point, Chrissy, when people are saying, you know, we're really fed up with the way politics are going, that's why I'm so surprised that people say, I hate, you know, there's such a gridlock. I want Trump. And Trump's response has been delay, delay, delay. How is that any better?
He doesn't talk like a politician. Well, he fools us into thinking he isn't.
Yeah. What, Chrissy?
My thing was the fact that if they waited until, let's say, a Republican does win the presidential nomination here and comes into office, then they wouldn't even be taking an oath until late January, mid-January. And so what's going to happen then with the Supreme Court? I just don't understand how that benefits this country at all, being down a Supreme Court justice for over a year. Mm-hmm. It just kind of blows my mind in that respect.
But I guess to all of this, though, it does remind you how important this moment in history is, right? Because Antonin Scalia was a Supreme Court justice for over, 30 years? And so this is an appointment that could have a lasting effect, again, in the same way he has. So everyone is digging in. But I think one of the risks that Republicans take is that they also have seats up for grab. So if they're going to start digging in, do they risk some of those seats going to a Democrat? And then if there's either a Republican or a Democratic president, is it then still harder for them to get what they wanted in the first place?
You know, I'm just curious about Christie's point about helping the country. I don't know why she thinks that politicians are supposed to help the country. That's not what they've been doing for a while now.
These are the guys who would absolutely shut down the government because they can't agree on a budget and they want to stay,
Now you're talking about Illinois. I don't know where you're going with your thoughts.
George Washington warned us, man. Go partisan.
No. Christy, thank you so much for your thoughts. And we appreciate that you joined the conversation. Let's go to Kenny before we go to a break. Kenny, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I have the same thoughts that it's really ridiculous that, I mean, you won't let a president, you want to deny a president his right to recommend who he wants. He won the election. He's president. He's entitled to nominate who he wants.
Right. Yeah, he doesn't become sort of a void president because somebody else is coming in 9 months. And the hubris to think, well, the people should have a voice. They did.
Right.
Yeah. They elected this president. That's why they voted. That is why, everybody, voting is important. If this isn't who you wanted to have to choose a Supreme Court justice, then you should get out there and voice your opinions. And vote.
Yep. And I also feel it was really disrespectful for Mitch McConnell to come out that early.
Yes.
Scalia's body wasn't even cold yet. For him to speak on that, he could have waited. He should have waited on that. It was disrespectful to him and his family.
I agree with that. I think we should all understand that the Washington subculture is such that there's always angling, even when people are, you know, in the hospital on their deathbed. So it's not strange to me to see when someone does pass, and God forbid, and bless their heart and rest in peace, that there's already angling in terms of who's going to be the replacement. I think it's worth mentioning again, I mentioned earlier, that this is actually something that the Democrats did do as well when President Bush won re-election, and then the Senate then got taken over by the Democrats and Senator Schumer, in an American Constitutional Society event, mentioned that they would oppose anyone that was brought to bear by President Bush, except in extraordinary circumstances. So I think to Ms. Vasquez's point that this is something that's always going to be done no matter who's in power. Whoever's in opposition is going to play whatever card they have to delay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So once you play that card, it's the president's turn to play his card. And let me ask you this. Is it any qualified Mexican descent judges that he could appoint
I'm sure there are. Are there? Todd's nodding. I'm not familiar with the...
Well, certainly. I mean, I'm a little biased from coming from Northwestern law, but we have Ruben Castillo, who's a really prominent judge, who's a really respected, a straight talker, who respects the Constitution and has a really strong and varied of a judicial record, that would be a wonderful individual to put on the court. I think
given the fact, that's what we should put on the court and let the Republicans deny him, and they will lose all the votes in upcoming elections in the Senate and in the presidential. They will lose everything once they deny a Mexican from being appointed Supreme.
I think there are so many different ways for the president to nominate somebody, have the public hearings, you know, all the questioning that goes on. Look, the last time I really watched Supreme Court justice nomination process was, honestly, was Clarence Thomas. It was riveting. Right. It was riveting television. Yes, I'm old enough. Shut up. Kenny, we're going to take a break here. Thank you for joining the conversation. We'll be right back after this. 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, enjoying some Lou Malnati's pizza. You can go to loumalnati's.com. It's so good. Deep dish, thin crust, all of it is amazing. And we're listening to music by Molehill. That was their song, I'm Okay. They'll be playing live in the Allstate Showcase Studio coming up after midnight. We are talking to Todd Belcour and Brandon C. Price and all of you about the political battle that is unfolding in Washington over the empty seat that Justice Antonin Scalia. Okay, hold on a second.
Harness your Italian heritage.
Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia has passed away this weekend, leaving a vacancy, one of the most important vacancies probably in recent memory, because of his impact on many decisions. What was that?
Because there's a potential to flip the court.
Right, because, and also, I mean, he... do we think that he had a lot of influence on other judges when it came to certain cases? Do we think he did? No, he absolutely did.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question about it. A gentleman who had that type of tenure and that strong of a personality, I think it's clear that he had a very strong influence.
Do we think
on
he was
Alito.
A bully or just that it was his?
I'm not saying any of those things.
Okay. Not in a bully, but like, you know, and it could seem like if he had such a great relationship with Justice Ginsburg, because she was saying that was her best friend.
That's right.
You know, she's somebody who was, she would write responses that were very long, as has Sotomayor, and many of them will, you know, disagree adamantly with some of the decisions that have come down. But he always seemed to be the one that, you know, and when it came to like, hadn't he said things about like women's rights and black rights? Like these were not things that were actually constitutional. Like, I mean, things that were pretty harsh when it came to civil liberties.
I don't know how to answer that. No, that's a fact. He did.
Yes.
He has plenty of quotes that are certainly considered incendiary for various people of either minority or of, you know, women's rights movements, all that stuff. And I think that a lot of that draws from the textualist way in which he perceived the Constitution.
Right.
The Constitution, there's multiple different theories on how you should interpret it. One is which you should interpret the way it's written and based on the, you know, the words and the context in which it was written or people believe.
But context was that they were white slave owners and men that wrote the Constitution. Why is that not – how is that not the context? Okay, let's go to Billy. Billy has a question or has a comment about our conversation. Hey, Billy, how are you doing?
I'm good, Patty. How are you?
Very well, thank you. What'd you want to share?
As always, a good discussion about politics.
Thank you.
When this news was just a wow factor, my first response was to send a text and say, and then follow that he had passed, and then say, I wonder who Obama will appoint.
Right.
Not thinking that this would even transpire within hours or days when Mitch McConnell, et cetera, the right, came out. And then Obama literally addressed it and said, I will.
Good. Yeah. I think
I want to know. Mm-hmm. I absolutely think that Obama knew exactly what he was doing by doing that.
Right.
He threw the jump ball up or threw the ball up and said, go for it.
Mm-hmm. Let's do this. Yeah.
Am I right by saying he knew what it would cause by him saying he will?
Right. I mean, it's going to cause us. No, and this is leadership on the right that has said for many years, no matter what this president does, we will say no. They became
exactly.
The party of no. And everybody has sort of, you know, we've seen the results of that. Some good, some bad. And, you know, we're still trying to navigate those waters. But this is an important moment in time that will have lasting effects for years to come.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask the gentleman that you have, if they agree with that, per the fact that had he said, I will not, wouldn't the right, Mitch McConnell and the, I'm trying to be nice here, the Republicans, I know I have other words for them, but wouldn't they have said, oh, yeah, he's weak, he's not going to do it?
Ooh. Oh, interesting.
He's not going to do his job. Had he said, I will leave it to the next president, would they not have come out and said, oh, yeah, there's your president for you?
Yeah, not a leader.
Well, it's funny.
Exactly.
In my attempts to be even-handed here, I find myself spending a lot of time defending Republicans. I think, in reality, I think the president, this would be one of the few instances in his entire presidency, if he were to say, you're right, let's wait till the next presidency, they would applaud his leadership. I think they would be like, see, you're right, allow the American public to decide. And I think that would be a folly, because he'd be going directly in opposition to his constitutional duty to make sure the court has staff.
And how would Scalia feel about that?
Yeah, the very person that we're talking about, yes, would disagree vehemently, or he should. You know, I don't. And the other thing, a lot of people, you know, when you think about what has happened over the last 16 years since the election of George W. Bush, when it came down to Florida, and I didn't know that there were discrepancies in Tennessee, by the way. Did you know that there were voting allegations of fraud in Tennessee, that there were a lot of people who were denied the ability to vote in Tennessee? I did not know that till this weekend, Billy. I was doing some research on that, and it was never even heard.
Like the 2000.
Media. Yeah, in 2000. That was never even covered because of how big Florida was.
Well, therein goes Mitch McConnell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know a lot of people are still holding a grudge against Gore for not fighting that out entirely through all the courts possible. So I think it's reasonable that if we're going to say every person, every vote, everyone should get their vote counted.
Craig's telling me I have to go. Brandy, Billy, Brandy, and Kenny, everybody that called in, thank you so much. Billy, you have a lovely evening, and thank you so much for joining the conversation.
You too.
More after this.
Axelrod.
There you go. Oh, good one. You're listening pretty late, and it is Music Monday in the Allstate Showcase Studio. We are pleased to welcome Molehill tonight, and here they are with The Repeating.
I want something. Tell me something good, maybe about that girl who loved you, cause this romance ain't right. I'm on the losing side, I gotta grit my teeth and close my eyes. Whoa. Never goes away, and my arms and legs are scarred, but I'll keep taking hits until the hammer falls. The bell rings one last time and I drop it all. I'll be the one.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that was amazing. That was Mulhill with their song, They're Repeating. And they are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio for Music Monday. Do we have, are there mics?
There are two mics that they could sit at. These two right here, gentlemen, if two of you guys want to sit down and do part of the interview now.
Yeah, two and two.
And then we'll get two of you guys after the first commercial.
Yes, so do two and two. So what are we getting? We're getting...
pull some straws right now, pick it.
Look, Todd's giving up his chair.
He's like,
look at that. He's like, I'm going to go get some pizza. Okay. Go get some pizza, will you?
Yeah, Todd, there's pizza.
We'll do more Supreme Court stuff after 12:30.
This is amazing. Lou Malnati's.
So much pizza, by the way, from Lou Malnati's. Brandon C. Price joins us. He's often here for our Music Monday extraordinary experience. So joining me over here, we have the keyboard pianist. Do you prefer keyboardist?
Keyboardist is good, yeah.
Keyboardist?
Keyboardist.
Is that a title? What? Come on closer to that microphone. What's your name?
Greg Van Zuden.
Hey, Greg Van Zuden. Where are you from originally?
I'm from the north suburbs of Chicago.
You know, you can be more specific than that. We all kind of know the north suburbs. You know, I don't know if you're familiar. This is Chicago.
And, it's true. It is true. I'm from Chicagoland.
Appreciate that. Are you worried that, like, is nobody home and you're afraid someone will break
in? No, I'm from Winnetka, Illinois.
We actually are familiar with Winnetka. Okay. Very nice over there. You have a lovely train station and some great boutiques over there.
We do.
Right off of Green Bay Road and such. Drums?
Yes, my name is Devin Staples.
Hey, Devin Staples. And where are you from originally?
Evanston, Illinois.
Also familiar. Well, look at all these. All North Shore. I'm going to go ahead and say North Shore all in the house. Did you go to ETHS?
Yes, I did.
Go Kits. Yep, my husband was an Evanston grad as well.
Oh,
he went to St. Athanasius, and King Lab, I think, was his first school.
Okay.
So, yeah, I like Evanston. It's sort of a great suburb in the fact that it has sort of everything, right? It's got the university, which, by the way, they pay no real estate, but that's fine. No taxes on that, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's a cool little college town.
A little bit. Yeah. Are you still living there?
No.
It's a cool little college town. I left.
No, now I'm
in the city.
Western suburbs.
Now. Oh, western suburbs. Oh, we'll let that
Lombard,
be. Yeah. Okay, there you go. You got to be specific there. So Devin Staples is from Evanston. Greg Van Zuden?
Van Zuden.
Van Zuden from Winnetka. And over there, was it bass or guitar? I can't see
you. We have this monitor here. But I'm Peter Manhart, and I'm from Libertyville.
Oh, look at that. We're getting farther north as we go. Peter Vanhart?
Peter Manhart.
Oh, man. I was going to say either one of those are very... what a great name. Is that your given name?
Or? Yeah, that's my
regular
name.
That's the kind of thing you go into, like, what should I use as a band name? Manhart.
Yeah, I was born into this.
What's the origin of Manhart?
I don't know. I think kind of German, Germanic, Norwegian, something around there.
I feel like I should say it that way. Manhart!
Yeah.
It seems like it should have that kind of
strong name, yeah.
From Libertyville. And what was the first instrument you played?
Me, piano.
Oh, so there you go. Yeah. So you picked up the guitar because it was a little more mobile, a little more chick-friendly?
Yeah, a lot cooler. I just, went to some, like a Tom Petty concert, I think. I was like, I should start playing guitar.
That will do it. I believe that Tom Petty turned a lot of people off of the keyboard.
Yeah.
and bass over here?
My name is Trevor Jones. I'm from the historic town of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
What? Okay, well, that's completely different than all of our northern side boys. Trevor, what brought you to Chicago?
I came out here to study with a bassist from the Chicago Symphony, Rob Kassinger.
And that's really the path a lot of people take is to... by the way, Craig, first time ever, somebody who came here to study with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. He came here from Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, of all places. How are you finding Chicago? How many years have you been here?
I've been out here since 2007, so I'm pretty...
So you're a little well-adjusted.
Pretty well acclimated,
Kind of gotten used to us over here.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever met anybody actually from Gettysburg. You just think of it as a big battlefield.
It is. The whole town is surrounded by it. I live about like 500 yards away from where I believe it was General Reynolds was shot.
And growing up in the shadow of Gettysburg, is it sort of a little bit of pressure to sort of know everything there is about the battles, about the speeches?
I can give some pretty decent impromptu tours of the battle.
I would imagine you probably can. Okay, here's my question. Any ghost stories? People have to have so many ghost stories about Gettysburg.
So...
You didn't think that it was going to go this way, did you? Nobody ever does.
I mean, my friends and I would usually troll ghost tours during high school, and we just, you know...
You would mess with the people on the tours?
Well, we just drive by and yell boo really loudly, and it was...
Oh, you could have gotten so much more intricate. You really could have gotten into the woods.
Yeah. No, I mean, right? there was... my dad works at Gettysburg College, and the building next to him, that... basement was actually like one of the hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
So they swear, and that's like the big admin building at the college. So they swear there are ghosts. And I mean, I've never seen a ghost. Right. So I don't really.
But people have stories.
They do. They do.
Well, you would think. I mean, this is a place where thousands of men. I mean, what was the number you have? I'm not going to put you on the spot. Just because you grew up there doesn't mean you should know.
It's in the
tens of thousands.
At least. At least.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, if there's going to be some places, come on, Devin, you got to admit, if there's going to be some place that's haunted, it's going to be Gettysburg.
Gettysburg. For
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, going to Devil's Den late night was definitely something we all did.
Now in Libertyville, did you go to Adelaide? Not Adelaide. So was Adelaide Stevenson your high school?
No, Libertyville High School.
Libertyville High School.
Stevenson was like our big rival, supposedly.
Yeah, the big fancy schmancy school out there. It had to be all brand spanking new when you started going.
What's that, Libertyville?
Yeah, no, the Adelaide Stevenson.
Stevenson. Yeah, yeah, they had a new school. Yeah, I was gonna say Libertyville was pretty darn old when I was going there. Like, yeah.
You sound angry about it.
It
fix
was
this
funny.
Stuff. Up.
Yeah.
And ETHS is a huge school. It's like a small town.
Yes. It's very huge.
Yeah. I went to Lane Tech. Like, so my husband and I always talk about how big. Like, you guys have I think you had an archery range in the basement. Did you know that?
What? That I didn't know.
Yeah, I believe it was an archery.
But it was definitely like when I first entered into ETHS, it was like a small college to me.
Yeah. It's a massive school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it has a great history. Yeah. And now Greg, from Winnetka, what high school, let me ask?
That would be the New Trier High School.
Oh, well,
I say it like Ohio State.
Did you know that our governor, his daughter could have gone to New Trier, but instead he like pulled some strings so she could go to Walter Payton in Chicago? Like, why would you?
I did not.
New Trier is like one of the best high schools in the country. Was there a lot of pressure there to like maintain that status?
To
like every day where your teacher's going, we are the best in the country. Why don't you live up to that?
I don't know. I don't think I felt that pressure, actually.
I really think you should if you guys have that title. I think it should be beaten into you every single day just to have that status. So were you playing in the band in high school?
I played piano all growing up. And then in the band, I played trombone.
Ooh.
So I'm a trombone player.
You were trying to figure out if that was a trombonist.
Yes.
But that sounds a little dirty. More after this on 720 WGN. It is Music Monday in the Allstate Showcase studio, and we are thrilled to have Molehill with us. Here they are with their song, Ghost Town.
Drop your guns and I'll drop mine. I've seen enough wasted life. My heart has tumbleweeds and I need to move on with my life. You and I will never love again. Lay your weapons down. No need to fight in this turn to dust. Oh, oh, oh.
Best thing ever.
Oh my God, that was remarkable. Thank you so much. That's Mahil. Come on and grab your microphones again before you guys grab some pizza from Lou Malnati's.
I'm tempted to tell them to break stuff in the studio, but I feel like that's the wrong thing to do.
It's been a while since we've had a full kit, a whole drum.
Yeah, we went a little bit like a more intimate approach the last few weeks, so I figured this was good to bring in guys with a keyboard, a drum set.
Yeah, no, because I forgot what my clavicle felt like when it vibrated. I forgot what that was like. That's
found it. It's right there.
It was right there. Oh, there it is, right there, right across my shoulders. Yeah, got it. Thank you so much, you guys. This is Mahil. We've got Greg, Devin, Peter, and Trevor in studio with us, and they've been playing for some great music. How long have you guys been together, Greg?
I joined the band. I was the last member in 2009.
Oh, so 2009. That's a good standing band. So who? No, we're getting a no from
is that not true?
From Peter and
early
Trevor.
2010.
Early 2010.
Beginning of 2010.
So, Devin. That was really close.
I came in August 2009. Oh, yeah, you came in 2010.
So who started the band then?
Me.
Oh,
yeah, and then Trevor.
It had to be Manhart, of course.
Manhart. I'm sorry. It's such a fun name.
It's cool. Yeah, you can say it all you like.
I feel like that should be like that's such a great romance novel name, Peter Manhart.
Yeah.
It's already got to be out there. So, what made you want to collect these talented young men to be in your band?
You know, it was just kind of a random chance that everybody sort of like showed up, because for a while I kind of had the band and I was always trying to find new personnel and everything. And then Trevor, one of our old bassists, was in the grad school, the master's program for upright bass at DePaul. And so he introduced Trevor to me. And then Trevor and I have been playing together now for like 8 years or something like that
point. That's a pretty long time. We've had a lot of bands in studio. And I mean, you go through phases where, you know, you kind of try to find the right fit. So this is a pretty long-standing band that you have here.
Yeah, that was the big trick, is like finding people that are all like-minded and ready to commit and are good at instruments and willing to play for not any money at first. So,
and that's
takes a while to find that.
It's a lot of artists you have. Yeah. And what do you do to support the work that you do? Can I ask? I'll go around. What else do you do?
Like day jobs?
Yeah,
I work for a website. I'm a product manager.
Okay,
so I'm the people person who talks to the engineers, customers.
Because they're not always easy to talk to.
That's true.
It's just a different frame of mind. That's all. And Devin?
Uber.
Oh, really? I had an interesting Uber ride tonight. Anyway, so it wasn't you. No, that wasn't you. I haven't had you yet, Devin. I'll try to. There's no way to request drivers.
We'll talk afterwards.
Oh, you take care of me. All right, give me a promo code, whatever it is. And how about yourself, Peter?
I work in finance right now for a trading firm.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. That can't be. I mean, it's got to be challenging, and yet it's not. I mean, creatively, how does that feel when you know what else you want to be doing?
Yeah, it's kind of a little soul crushing. It feels like I'm working for the devil a little bit. So
Are you actually trading stuff? Like, is Manhart yelling on the Wall Street floor or something?
I do
trade, buy, sell.
A little bit, yeah.
Manhart.
Yeah. You know, there's actually another.
I want him to sign off every sentence with just Manhart.
After each trade, I say Manhart. Yeah. No, there's. I actually have an uncle, Peter Manhart, who reads on. What station is it? 780, I want to say, but he reads.
Oh, don't talk about.
Oh, shoot!
No,
I mean,
no,
I mean 720. No, but he reads. He reads like the weekly grain report, and it's another Peter Manhart.
Oh wow!
But,
there
yeah,
you
he's
go.
He's got a low, smoky voice, but don't listen to that station.
It's totally fine. Please, we're fine. We're totally fine. It's all right. And how about yourself, Trevor?
I play at a theater in the suburbs, doing like musicals. Right now, I'm doing Sister Act at the Marriott Theater.
Oh, wonderful!
Yeah.
So kind of, and you have like a different. Then you have a sort of of a challenge of the different rotation and the different stylings you have to put together for each production.
Yeah, yeah. And then I also do a decent amount of teaching. Like, I teach at Illinois Wesleyan, and going to sleep a couple hours and drive down to Bloomington tomorrow.
Is that why you were like, so how many songs are we doing? Because we got to go. Yeah. We got to go. We want to have our pizza. Well, I want to welcome you to have some pizza. Before we do that, though, just one more question. If you guys want to talk a little bit about the process for writing music and putting these pieces together, how does that begin? Is it just sort of a collaboration? Do you have, you know, one day we get together and go, this is what I've been thinking about?
We definitely do not get together and jam.
No.
A lot of bands seem to do that. We don't, because of our schedules and my impatience. they're all laughing. Or
it's
not
untrue.
Devin just gave a very subtle, it's about right.
Yeah. Well, you know, getting four people together is tough enough, and then getting four people to actually not play while someone else is trying to communicate is really difficult. So we do a lot of writing just like through Dropbox, like,
Interesting. Sure. Shared files.
Yeah. And we just listen and, you know, do tons of email chains and, submit, you know, vocal ideas, bass ideas back and forth. But yeah, it's all pretty much online. And then we get together and start rehearsing those pretty fleshed out ideas.
And where can we find your music online? Is there any place? No?
What do you
want to let people know about how to find you in whatever capacity that is, live or...
Yeah, so we actually have a show coming up on March 5th, Saturday, March 5th at Martyrs.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, and it's a Southwest send-off show. A South by Southwest send-off show. We're going... we're going to Austin. We were there last year. We have a couple showcases lined up. So we'll be playing down there. You know, we're on YouTube. You can just search Molehill, Molehill Band, Chicago Molehill, whatever. And molehillmusic.com is our website. But we're on everything, Spotify, SoundCloud, all that good stuff.
All that stuff.
You might be on MySpace still.
Yeah.
It's coming back. I've heard it's coming back.
Please check
just
us
for,
out there.
Just for music.
Yeah.
Okay, one more. I lied. One more question. So where'd the name Molehill come from? Manhart.
Yeah, that was,
you need the initials MH. You used to like want to put on
your... Oh, yeah. I didn't ever even thought about that, but that's
seriously.
Great. Nah, I never did. No, it's, you know, kind of because...
Craig's all excited.
No, I'm sure he just realized that now.
What? Yeah, no, now I'm like, Molehill Manhart.
What?
No, it's, you know, kind of because we started out as the band started in Champaign, and there was this big... I went to school down in Champaign, so I started the band down there.
It's a lovely institution.
Yeah, it was a good time for sure.
Great bands come out of Champaign.
Yeah, tons of good bands.
And was Blind Pig still there when you were? Not that I ever.
You know, it was closed for most time, and then it opened up right as I was about to leave.
Okay.
But they didn't have music there. But there was a good music scene, but we were kind of, you know, when we started out, we were a tiny little deal, and, you know, we weren't like part of like the cool, hip crowd of bands. And so we called ourselves Molehill because, you know, we're a small thing now, and then one day we'll be big, you know, as in make a mountain out of a molehill.
But you'll still be called a molehill.
then it'll be
molehill
ironic.
Mountain.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, you guys. Grab
thank
some
you
pizza.
So much for having us.
Oh,
really
of course. Our
you.
Pleasure. We look forward to having you back. And
awesome.
Have again, their show is on Saturday, March 5th at Martyrs, and they're heading out to South by Southwest. Have a good time, guys.
Cool. Thank
Thanks
you.
A lot. Thank you.
You are listening pretty late, and that's more music from Molehill with their song No Reprieve. And we want to thank engineer Bob Ferguson for making them sound so amazing live in studio. That was probably one of the best performances we've had, and it would not be possible without Bob Ferguson. Thank you so much. We are in studio with attorney and adjunct professor from Northwestern Law University, Todd Belcour, who also works for the Anti-Poverty Laws. No, what is it? No, you don't work
Chicago
for
Chicago International Social Change Film Festival.
That's what I said. I heard it both ways.
Yeah,
very similar
through film.
Yes, trying to bring change
clearly
and raise awareness, and also raising awareness for humor, for music, for drinking is Brandon C. Price.
The important issues I've got the back. So.
No, but you always have a great insight on so many different issues across the board on both sides of the political aisle. And joining us online on our phone right now is attorney Rich Lenkoff, the better half of Legal Face Off on WGN Plus. The other guy is Jason What's-His-Face. Is that about right, Rich?
Yeah, we forget his last name, as we always do, which is appropriate given that he is somewhere off doing something nefarious at this time of night. But yeah,
that sounds,
Jason Whiteside.
Sounds about right. Where are you? Okay, Now, we've talked to Todd a little bit about his thoughts on the passing of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. What were your thoughts when he passed away on Saturday, when you heard the news?
I was surprised. You know, like most people, I did not know that he was ill or think he was ill. He was in pretty good health. So I was surprised and then, you know, immediately thought of the implications on the court. In fact, I was driving home from taking my son to the Monster Jam rally out in Rosemont.
Nice.
And my friend who took his son is a pretty right-wing kind of guy, and we immediately got into a discussion about, you know, whether the Senate would block Scalia's replacement. So, you know, like many people, it immediately devolved into this discussion about politics. You know, sort of sad that people didn't really get to mourn Scalia very long until people started to talk about the implications on the court.
No, you're right. And there were a few, you know, moments, if you turned on the broadcast, whether it was CNN or Fox News or MSNBC, that talked about his journey being the first Italian-American on the Supreme Court, his incredible development as a legal mind. And, you know, you're right. There wasn't enough time to kind of go, look, this man had a significant impact on the way law is carried out in this country. Yeah, no, but I'm saying Todd saying he did. Yes, but we did. I mean, some people do at some point. But when you said that your friend was talking about how, you know, Republicans might block, did it ever occur to you that they would just come right out and say he can't do it? He should not even bother, because that's basically what Mitch McConnell has said.
I was a little surprised at how quickly McConnell said that. Although my friend, who, you know, is sort of the same mindset as McConnell, literally within minutes said, yeah, there's, you know, the thing is dead on arrival. So, you know, I wasn't surprised. I was a little surprised at how quickly it happened. But ultimately, I think the McConnell, you know, and the others fell right on partisan lines. So not too surprised.
Well, we've been talking about this, too. Wouldn't this be a great time to just kind of put up everybody and let the people that, you know, if everyone's a surefire denial, if they're all going to be blocked, then put up people and allow the country to watch the process and, you know, and unfortunately, that means that some people will kind of go through the grind but to no avail as
a
far
martyrdom.
As a little bit. What would that look like if, you know, the Senate hears testimony from possible judges and that, you know, men and women who are qualified and just, you know, just say no, just for the sake of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll make the Republicans look pretty terrible if they put up a judge who is clearly qualified. I mean, you know, a lot of talk is on these two judges who were approved in their current seat just, you know, within the last 12 months by a count of 97 and 96 to nothing. So how can you approve, if you're a Republican, how can you have just voted unanimously in favor of these Court of Appeals judges or appellate court judges, and then, you know, 6 months later, just because they are, you know, potential Supreme Court justices, find that they're not qualified? Marco Rubio yesterday said on the Sunday talk shows that there's a higher standard. I mean, there's a bit of a higher standard, but not that much different. I would ask, you know, Rubio and these other Republican senators, why were they qualified 6 months ago if they're not qualified today? So, I mean, to answer your question, you could go one of two ways. You could nominate someone who is, you know, very liberal and who is definitely not going to get approved. But I would, if I was Obama, you know, nominate someone who is a little more moderate, who otherwise would be qualified, and let the Republicans show that it's clearly not based on their qualifications that they're, you know, voting against these justices. It's simply based on partisan politics, which I think looks ridiculous.
And I agree. And it would be interesting to see how that would play out. We've been talking a little bit about how Justice Scalia had such a prominent presence and possibly influenced other justices. Who do you think steps in kind of now? Is it Justice Roberts as kind of the more prominent voice in the court? You know, he is the Chief Justice.
Yeah, I think Roberts, you know, he has the potential to do that, but you know, he's scorned by a lot of Republicans for, I mean, we saw it in the debate Saturday night for a couple of his decisions, including upholding Obamacare a couple of times. I think Kennedy becomes really, you know, even more important than he was before. Kennedy has always been traditionally the swing vote because he hasn't been stridently conservative, but I think he becomes even more important as we go forward. I mean, you know, Kagan, Breyer, Ginsburg, they're all, you know, always going to vote, you know, fairly liberal. The Republican nominated people like, Thomas and Alito, they're always going to be, you know, voting fairly conservatively. But the ones
I just snorted a little bit whenever I think of Clarence Thomas. I don't know why, just because it just seems like he's such an outlier when it comes to ever even saying anything on any decisions. Am I wrong about that?
He has a vote.
He has a vote, but he hasn't.
He's the polar opposite of Scalia. I mean, Scalia really ushered in the era of justices questioning attorneys from the bench a lot more than they ever did. Before Scalia, you know, justices didn't really ask too many questions. Well, Scalia came in and changed that. And then Thomas is the polar opposite because Thomas, you know, has asked like one question in the last 20 years.
Exactly.
So a couple different ways of approaching these hearings. But I got a great Scalia story.
Yes, please.
Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I went to a event for Scalia's. He wrote a book. He co-authored it with another professor. The book was about how to argue before the court. Great book. Just, you know, Scalia, even though he was a pretty brilliant, one of the most brilliant legal minds around, the point of this book was, you know, just talk very simply, approach these cases simply rather than, you know, with a lot of legalese. Anyway, went to the book signing, and he was taking questions. And for weeks I was preparing, and I was thinking, what would be the question I should ask, you know, this brilliant legal mind
right. Who
I had studied in law school. So this was probably 5 or 6 years ago when Bush versus Gore was still, you know, somewhat fresh in the mind of the public. And, you know, if you recall, the Bush versus Gore case was about whether the Supreme Court should step in and stop Florida from counting the votes for the presidency. Well, I was sitting, by the way, right near Scalia. He gave this very interesting discussion and took questions and answers. All the questions and answers have to be written down on a postcard or sized piece of paper. So I wrote down my question, thinking that, you know, maybe he wouldn't get to it because there are so many questions. Well, after reading a couple of questions, and this was a very, very conservative audience, everything he said was being like literally eaten up by the audience, very supportive. So he picks a cue card after about 2 or 3 questions, and I know it's my question from the way he sort of looks at it, and he starts to read it. And my question was, how do you, he was in the majority in Bush versus Gore, so I said, how do you reconcile longstanding Supreme Court or longstanding conservative deference to the states with your decision in Bush versus Gore? The point
Good
of my question.
Question
was,
yes.
Yeah, if you're conservative, you all, you know, you believe in states' rights and leaving the states alone and letting them decide, yet in this most important, you know, arguably the most important case in the last 50 years, Scalia, in the majority, wrote that they should, you know, step in and not let Florida decide, but the Supreme Court should decide to end the questions. Anyway, he starts reading the question, and you could tell that he was really sort of pissed off with the question, and, you know, how dare the questioner question the decision. And as he's reading it, he gets to the word precedence, and he sort of stops. And remember, there's probably, you know, 1,000 people in the room, very conservative crowd. Already when they heard the question, they were unhappy with the tone of it. So when he gets to the word precedence, he stops, and you could hear a pin drop. And, you know, he's a very sarcastic, you know, very sort of witty.
And dismissive, a little dismissive, let's
very
say.
Very dismissive, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So he gets to the word precedence and stops and spells it out. He says, precedence. Precedence.
Oh, no.
As he spells it out, the entire crowd just roars in laughter.
Oh.
As he points out that I misspelled the word precedence.
Oh, no.
And then, you know, he didn't know who asked it, but I mean,
right. Well, you're certainly not going to step forward at that point, right?
Yeah. I was pointing to my buddy next to me, and I felt like the whole room was like staring at me. So then as he points out how stupid the questioner is for misspelling precedence, he goes on to explain why substantively it's a ridiculous question. Anyway,
did he answer your question to your satisfaction?
I mean,
to your satisfaction?
Well, he didn't really answer it. He sort of said, like, get over it, which he said a bunch of times. Bush versus Gore. But then just the follow-up to the story is afterwards, I get a line to have him sign my book, and I get to the front, and he signs it, and then I say, Your Honor, if you wouldn't mind signing it to the idiot who can't spell Prescott.
Nice.
I'd really appreciate it.
So you have that.
I have it in my office. Now the final part of that story is there's two ways of spelling precedent. He meant it as the plural of the word precedent. I meant it as precedence, E-N-C-E, which is a proper way of spelling it. But, you know, who am I to question Antonin Scalia?
Yeah. Well, apparently you gave it your best shot. We have to take a break here. We want to come back and maybe talk a little bit more about the Supreme Court situation, but also about the Jackie Robinson case that's coming up. And we are hanging out with Rich Lenkov. In studio, we've got Todd Belcour and Brandon C. Price. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, joined by Brandon C. Price and Todd Belcour. We also have on the line with us from Legal Face Off, Rich Lenkov. Hey, Rich, before we start talking about the Supreme Court, and, you know, this is going to be weeks, months discussion, but what does it look like if he is not allowed, if the president of the United States is unable to name a replacement? What happens to the court? What happens to any cases in front of the court?
Well, you've got a 4-4 tie, you know, if it is a 4-4 tie, not every case, of course, you know, is a 5-4 decision. But if you do have a 4-4 tie, that means that the lower court's decision would stand. And, you know, we'd have to wait until there is a 5-4 majority to take those cases up again. So any cases that are pending and do result in a tie, it would be as if the Supreme Court never decided, the lower court decision would stand, and then it would be up to a litigant to take that same issue up in another case before the Supreme Court in the future.
Because that was my understanding, that the lower court's judgment might stand, and that might impact some cases that would be, I think, beneficial to Republicans and also possibly against what they want, right? There's a union case that's up. There's an abortion case in Texas. There's a lot in the balance here when it comes to long-term decisions.
Yeah, I mean, the Republicans, you know, ought to be concerned about cases if they do block Scalia's successor. They ought to be concerned about cases that they're hoping to overturn at the Supreme Court level that otherwise would stand. As you mentioned, there are some lower court rulings that Republicans are very aggressive at bringing in front of the Supreme Court. And, you know, before the Scalia court, they would have probably overturned it. Now, if it's a tie, then the lower court decision will stand. Of course, you know, the opposite is true for cases that liberals wanted to overturn. So it cuts both ways.
It's a lose-lose. Some people are saying it's a win-win for President Obama, where, you know, the Republicans, if they dig in, they look like they're being complicated, they're being difficult, and, you know, perhaps that will jeopardize some of their seats coming up in the elections later this fall. But it seems to me that it's a lose-lose for everybody if you're just all being jerks.
I mean, there's no, listen, I think over the last, even in the last 24 hours, we've seen you know, a lot of Republicans step back from this, you know, knee-jerk reaction that they won't even consider it. I don't know how, especially, you know, the ironic part is Scalia was an originalist, right? We've all heard that he was, you know, a believer in the original intent of the framers of the Constitution. How could you talk about replacing an originalist by not adhering to the very words? I mean, it's completely nuts. Like, the Republicans are just making this stuff up out of thin air. It doesn't say anywhere in the Constitution that the last 11 months of the, you know, president's term, you shouldn't be allowed to nominate your successor. He should be allowed to nominate him up until the day he leaves office.
And to be fair, it's not all Republicans. It's leadership right now. Mitch McConnell and the gentlemen that are all running for the presidency are the ones that are stepping up in front and saying, let's delay this, let's make it hard, and that kind of stuff. But I think there are a lot of people on both sides who are like, let's let the president do his job.
Well, I haven't heard. I mean, like I said, there has been some moderation from Republicans who aren't running for the presidency. But, you know, the Republicans are the majority in the Senate. That's the body that would, you know, hold hearings. There hasn't been. I don't think there's been one Democrat who said, let's block this. I mean, it's been all Republicans.
Right.
I don't think there's any serious person, you know, they don't have to be an elected official, just any serious person who has a basic understanding of the Constitution who would argue that Obama should not be allowed to nominate Scalia's successor. And I don't think it's proper to block the nominee simply on political, you know, on a political basis. If they want to hold a hearing and prove that the nominee is not qualified, that's one thing. That's an incredibly hard burden, though. I mean, remember, you know, anyone who Obama puts up is going to be, you know, one of the most qualified legal, yep, you know, figures in the country. So it's going to be a rejection simply on partisan, you know, and political reasons.
Before we let you go, we are, by the way, we are talking to attorney Rich Lenkoff from Legal Face Off on WGNplus.com with his, you know, less intelligent, less brilliant. Todd's like, why gotta be so mean to Jason Whiteside? You don't know. Unless he comes on the show, I can neither negate nor qualify any of the statements that are made on this show. What is the case with the Jackie Robinson baseball team?
We saw the, I think it was 13... our parents of 13 of the members of the team file a lawsuit against Little League International and also Stephen A. Smith, who's an ESPN commentator, saying that they suffered emotional distress and other damages as a result of the team being stripped of their title. We all know that Jackie Robinson West made it to the, you know, Little League World Series and lost ultimately, but they won the North American Championship, and they were later stripped of that because Little League International decided that they violated the rules because many of the players didn't meet the geographical boundaries of you know, that the league required.
Right.
Now they're suing, saying that they weren't aware of these boundaries, they weren't told of them. They weren't aware of these eligibility restrictions, and that they Little League made a lot of money off of the story. You know, I personally think it's sort of a ridiculous lawsuit. Like many lawsuits, it'll be very difficult to prove, even if there is liability, even if the plaintiffs can prove that somehow there was some liability. You know, like many lawsuits, damages are very difficult to prove. I don't know what damages can be proved.
Right.
Emotional distress allegation is one that I defend, you know, every day, and it's just, you know, it's rarely something that's legitimate.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if they. My guess it's gonna go away. I don't see how they have a leg to stand on. You know, it was an unfortunate situation, and the kids were the ones that were left kind of bearing the burden of pain, I think. So it's just a sad story because they worked so hard. Rich Lenkoff, we want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Patty.
Excellent. Have a great night. That's Rich Lenkoff from Legal Face Off on WGNplus.com. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. I just told our guests in studio, Todd Belcour and Brandon C. Price, about, and I actually told Craig before the show about something I've done on Facebook that I will continue to do until I'm just bored, I guess. But I got angry. Sometimes somebody, I don't usually respond to hateful language on. I just go, oh, there's somebody I don't need to see on my Facebook page anymore. Jen Kramer, who is the director of entertainment and special events at Navy Pier, made this great point. Her Facebook page, she treats as her living room. So people who post things, it's like having a conversation. And if you say something that I would not let you stay in my house and say, if you were saying hateful things, if you're yelling things at me, calling me names, I would ask you to leave. Brandon, you don't spend that much time on Facebook.
I don't. I have one so that all the shows can tag me. Yeah, but I'm a Twitter man. I'm starting to get more and more into it.
And I think Twitter has a little bit of the back and forth, but Facebook, because you can have this thread.
Oh, yeah. I can't. I just. Yeah. Why? Why put your personal life and all that in thoughts. Front of a million. I just,
yeah.
My goodness.
So one of the Facebook friends, and I say friends in the way that you would put quotations around it, he posted a link. Now, the entire rage over Beyonce's halftime performance, I don't know when people started getting mad. I don't know if they were mad as they saw it or as they were being told they should be angry about it, that it became a Black Lives Matters thing. I know that there was a woman sportscaster who said, you know, I'm tired of this Black Lives Matter more, which, by the way, I don't think it's ever been Black Lives
That's
Matter
too
more.
Long of a hashtag to use
it's
on Twitter.
So long. So many words. But, I mean, Todd, what has been your take on the outrage after? I mean, have you seen some of this just sort of unfold? Have you had any conversations or are you just watching idiots online get mad about it?
Well, I think anytime anyone who is in the popular culture and they make a political stance, it's a shock to white America generally, because there's sort of a notion of exceptionalism. So when you're an athlete or a pop star, you're not seen as Black like Trayvon Martin.
Right.
You're seen as a different kind of Black.
That's what this sportscaster said. She said, little girls want to be like you, and they're not Black. Like, you know, somehow, like, you're more than just being Black. You're this pop star. And we still want to be like you, even though we wouldn't actually want to be Black. I mean, I mean, that's the, isn't that the tone of it?
Tough propositions on the show.
Yeah.
Well, no, there's no question. I mean,
welcome to the party.
All right. African American folks have really been one of the catalysts in the creativity that's that this country's been known for. But at the same time, they haven't been really appreciated for the value that they bring to the community. So to the extent you can be silent as relates to political concerns, that gives you gravitas in the greater community in terms of popularity and things like that. But if you start to speak out, then it's easy then to indict you as a pariah because then you're biting the hand that feeds you, so to speak.
Well, but that's not necessarily universally true. There are quite a few people like myself that didn't even notice, during the Super Bowl that there was a political...
I didn't.
Well, so during the Super Bowl, Beyonce and the performers that she had behind her, her backup dancers, yeah, singers, they all dressed similarly to, like, Black Panther Party supporters.
Oh, I thought it was Michael Jackson tribute.
I didn't know.
He wore that outfit.
Yeah, I didn't know Black Panthers wore bodysuits. Like,
right.
Like,
no, so I also
long sleeve bathing suits.
I also didn't notice. So what sometimes is a shame is that the craziest voices make it to the forefront on the internet or wherever, and that's not necessarily representative of all the voices. And so there really is this reaction that kind of snowballs and takes over. And I would assume that's the minority of a certain group of people that are this angry, this upset about something that a lot of us probably didn't really know was commentary in the first place. And once I'm told it's commentary, okay, that's fine. Like, that's great. Like, cool.
Okay.
It doesn't change my perception of the performance at all.
Ignorance is usually very loud.
It is. Well, do you remember what happened to the Dixie Chicks when they said that they were embarrassed that the president of the United States
was...
Well,
their fans are all country music fans. You had to know what you were doing.
I mean, that pretty much ended their careers.
They're big in Europe.
Way to get and be money.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, like, they pretty much, they've made like maybe one album. I think they broke up, but I mean, Beyonce's not going to suffer as a result of this.
The Queen is untouchable.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a hypersensitivity, though. I think there's definitely a segment of the population, to his point, that is always kind of on the watch to see if people are going to do anything that to really exalt any ethnicity besides white people. And I think that's a particular risk when you say Black power. It doesn't say you don't want to take power away from anyone else. You just want to empower the individuals who have been systematically deprived of power, access to economic power, access to political power, access to spiritual, physical power.
Right.
So and until we can actually have that honest discussion, I think it would be much more difficult to really grapple with the disrespect that President Obama deals with, to grapple with a lot of the issues that we deal with on the community level within Southside Chicago and things like that.
Well, and people don't, they, you know, they say that it has nothing to do with his color. And I think a lot of people are honest when they say that. I think that a lot of people are honest about not liking the president because they are staunchly conservative. I think that they get to still hold their ground as to what the tone is might be affected by an underlying racism. But I don't think that applies to everybody who disagrees with the president. It can't apply to everybody that disagrees with the president.
I'm not saying that. I certainly think that there's degrees of enthusiasm which you oppose individuals. And certainly there can be other contributing factors besides just disagreeing what they say politically.
Yes.
Yes. It's, I mean, it, you certainly you see, you know, so many people are influenced by how they're raised and it, politically and with social issues like racism. So it's almost, even if someone doesn't necessarily feel like, well, he's a black president, so therefore I disagree with him. But I know I disagree with him, and the language and the rhetoric that I was raised with teaches me to follow that up with, and, you know, he's a black. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it almost gets coupled by ignorance, even not just by that racist super faction on the side, but also even more towards the moderates because of the way that ignorance is so loud.
Right.
And they couple those things together, which is
there's no
awful.
Filter. There's and so the person on Facebook started, you know, he started posting things about how, you know, police departments are upset because a Black Panther murdered a police officer in the 1970s. And then it devolved into calling Beyonce the N-word. And I was caught off guard because, I mean, like, you generally, no matter what a conversation is about, it doesn't usually come to that. And so I just put, huh, question mark, and then nothing. So I wrote, no, seriously, what? And then I went back and realized later he just removed his statement, but I had taken a screenshot of his language. Because
screenshot will get you.
I knew that he would be like, oh no, someone's paying attention, and somebody who has, you know, I have a radio show, I will say your name. I mean, like, because you put it out there publicly, like, it's Facebook. There's no reason why I can't.
Yeah, no, you're not hurting anybody. That man made that choice.
Craig just sat up and he goes, hold on a second, let me check the book.
No, it's totally fine. Did anyone by chance catch the SNL parody of this this past weekend?
They did. Completely hilarious.
Yeah, they did a movie trailer. Yeah, they did a movie trailer for a scary movie. Do you want to hear a little bit of it?
I really do.
Really, really
fun. It's hilarious. It's the best thing they've done in the last 20 years.
For white people, it was just another great week. They never saw it coming. They had no warning. Then, the day before the Super Bowl, it happened.
Beyonce released a new music video that embraces her Black heritage.
Beyonce video is unapologetically Black.
Tribute to the Black Lives Matter movement.
Showcase for Black Method.
Claims her Blackness black. Like never before.
Honey, get in black here.
Video, yes.
What is it? What's wrong?
Black.
Out of nowhere.
I think Beyonce is Black.
The day Beyonce turned Black.
Guys, I don't understand this new song.
Hot sauce in my bag swag? What does that mean?
Maybe the song isn't for us.
But usually everything is!
It was the day that shook the whole white world.
We have to go. We have to leave America. Beyonce is Black.
Amy, I'm Black.
What? No, you're not. You're like my girl.
Yeah, but I can still be Black. There's Black people all over the world. That guy's Black.
Huh. I know he's Black. Beyonce is Black. What about Single Ladies?
She was Black in that.
What about Jumpin' Jumpin'?
She was Black in that, too.
What about the Pink Panther movie?
Okay, yeah, she was white in that.
It was the day white people lost their Beyonce.
Getting word now that Beyonce isn't the only Black celebrity. Some are saying Kerry Washington may also be Black.
No, it can't be. She's on ABC.
I don't understand. How can they be Black? They're women.
I think they might be both.
Best thing they've done in 20 years, I'm telling you.
Yeah, man. That it's when they get smart and not just funny. You really have to tip your hat.
Yeah.
Wow.
David Bernie Sanders was not as good as this, but also entertaining.
With the Titanic or the whatever the boat was?
What was it?
They were on a sinking ship last week.
Oh, then they've done a couple because I didn't see that one.
When Bernie Sanders was actually on SNL, they did that. But actually the funnier SNL bit about Bernie was when it was just Larry David doing his original Bernie Sanders impression.
Yeah, oh. It just kept pissing people off by being like too straight. And it was just Curb Your Enthusiasm with Bernie's glasses on.
Well, 312-981-7200. Are you disappointed that Beyonce's Black? More after this on 720 WGN. Sorry, I can't stop dancing, Craig. You were saying something about one texter not liking that Beyonce sells sex.
Yeah, we got a text in from the 815. I just do not like that Beyonce sells sex more than any other message. Not a role model for young, white, or black girls.
There is music that sometimes you hear the lyrics to. Now, Brandon, you work a lot with music, and mm-hmm. you guys make your own music, as it were, your own lyrics. You improvise them on the spot as a part of your performance, comedy music drinking show at Vamp, MCL, Fridays and Saturday nights. Did I get it right?
Music, comedy, drinking show. The order doesn't matter. The words are right. I'll take it.
All right. Music, comedy, drinking show. All right, there it is. All right, I'll do it. I got to write it. I wrote it down on another piece of paper that I threw away.
Comedy, music, drinking show. No.
Music, comedy, drinking,
drinking
show.
Drinking, yeah.
You guys, music, I went to a lot of show. Committees. We did a lot of public surveys to get this title.
Music, comedy,
drinking, right. Music,
drinking
comedy.
Show.
All well, the exit polls said music, comedy, okay. drinking.
There's a lot of music because you guys have to be well versed in all different styles, right?
Yeah,
because
tons of genres, tons of references.
So you know that there is music that is completely inappropriate for young people.
Yeah, Hank Williams III.
Hank Williams III? What does he think, sing about?
You don't. I mean, you think the N-word on Facebook is bad?
Can you pull me up some Hank Williams III? There's not a tear in my beer like his grandpappy?
No, no.
Oh, what's in his beer?
I'm crying for you, dear.
If it's as bad as Brandon says, I'm not going to play any of it.
Yeah, no, you can't. I don't think you can play any of it.
What does he do? Okay. Does he do like hip-hop country? What is he doing?
Sounds like
no,
he gets
it would be the
racial.
Opposite of that. Like, yeah. It is racially charged.
Oh!
Right.
Yeah.
He's going. So Trump is using him at all of his rallies.
You know what? He might. He might come out. Didn't Hillary come out to a Beyonce song at one point?
It's always amusing when a politician uses a musician. Like,
right.
Eye of the Tiger, I think that they were trying to use that, and they were like, you can't use that song. Every few years,
not quite public domain.
We don't have anything to do with your campaign. Yeah.
They've been using Adele. Donald Trump was using it, and she came out, and she's like, no. No one can use my
from
music.
From the crazy side.
Nailing it. Keep going.
I have to say Adele is, I can't get enough of Adele.
Can't get enough of Adele, can you?
Tonight, Adele, not so great.
Oh, what did she sing?
Not so strong. It was one of her new songs that Bruno Mars co-wrote with her, and they introduced it, and then there were some technical issues. We could hear Justin Bieber playing his guitar.
Well, that needs
song.
To never happen.
Yeah.
Oh, come
Does
on.
He play
the
Biebs'
new album is strong. He's back. I'm
are you
movie.
Saying things that are real?
Wait a minute. My biggest question in what Brandon just said is he's back. So he was here at one point before this?
Yes, he was huge when he was 12 and he didn't have
a stupid
mouth.
I don't care how huge he was. He wasn't good at stuff.
Kid can play every instrument.
Kind of
he may be an idiot. And the other thing is, he was raised. He was emotionally stunted because he never had to grow up past 12 because the whole world gave him everything he wanted at 12 years old. Can
you
imagine?
So he is a victim. Yeah.
No, I'm not calling him a victim. I'm just saying that's why the way that is the way it is. Some people say that same thing about Michael Jackson. I don't disagree
or agree.
Or the
affluenza teen who ran to Mexico.
Good Lord, don't get me started on that kid.
As what were you
did
say,
you did you see though Justin Bieber at the Grammys?
Yes,
he had this sad little because I'm only 22 years old.
Some of us can't grow
hair.
One.
Yeah, but it looked really gross. Like it looked like that really bad mustache that like junior high kids grow.
Okay, oof. Since we're in this territory,
here.
I can't hold my tongue anymore.
Please don't.
I Griffin's not listening to the show, I don't think, all the time. He will demand apologies from me occasionally, and I think I have addressed those in the past. He is the first child in his class to display facial hair. And some of the parents are starting to sort of, they're not saying anything to him. They're making jokes to me because, and one of the moms said, no, it's because I've known him since he was in kindergarten and it's so weird now. But do I don't think I should shame him into shaving it
no.
if he doesn't feel like it's.
No, because he's a little kid.
He's 12.
Yeah, that's like a source
and he's
of
handsome.
Pride.
Yeah, great job. Don't teach that boy shame. Let him do it.
Well, yeah.
Absolutely. That's awesome.
Because, you know, if people have a hard time, like, let him be him. If he looks in the mirror and he's fine with it.
I feel like all the other boys are probably like, man, you got a mustache.
Is he completely unaware of it or?
It's very hard. It's like one of those things where I think he doesn't, it's like the light isn't right for him to see it in the mirror. I think mine was about the same when I was in sixth grade. And let's call him Guido Visconti because that was his name.
Uh-huh.
We were in class and you remember we used to have class, like our desks were right next to each other. We had like the U-shaped thing going and Guido looked over and he goes, you know, you have sideburns. And like after that, I became obsessed with getting rid of all the hair on my face. just all of it. To the
from
point,
the boy named Guido.
From the boy named Guido. Yeah. That was a thing. Like,
let's leave him alone. He seems like a nice kid. Guido is a good guy.
And he did. He had a little caterpillar. He had like one of those little. His was.
Oh, he's
and,
Italian.
And he had. Yeah, he was dark skinned, and he had. But his was like growing in.
I know. I got mine. By the, I was probably the same age as Griffin.
Yeah, you got a solid beard.
Yeah,
listeners
at
home, Craig Collins looks good.
I cannot be fully clean shaven. It is impossible.
It's like a 6-hour changeover.
Yeah.
See, mine's the same way, but it stops here.
Oh,
like I had this in 6 hours
can't
of
have,
shaving.
Like, a beard?
Oh no! This is what I. This is, will like last
a,
for weeks.
And you have a gap here between like
thank
the
you,
corners
Patty.
Of your lip.
Tell the world,
like, Brandon. Also, the side of your face looks weird. I just want
yeah,
you to know.
Yeah. No. I'm really funny though.
No, because you have a 6 o'clock shadow, but it's not everywhere. It's like it's
yeah, it picks and chooses.
All right,
it seems to be the curse of many
patchy.
Many men.
Yes.
I've also discovered my widow's peak is new.
You have
I know,
a widow's
I got,
peak?
I got one of those.
That's
two
a
now.
Good thing. That means your hair's growing forward.
No. No, it means everything else is growing back.
Brandon, do you mind mentioning your age on the air?
I will be 29 next week.
Mm-hmm. At 26, 27, my widow's peak. It started happening. Mm-hmm. And that is a devastating time.
I will tell the world a secret. I will do it right now on the radio.
Go ahead.
I just for men my widow's peak.
Mm-hmm. I almost did. I came so
wait,
close to
it?
Buying just for men.
Gray?
Yeah. Oh, this yeah. whole thing, this whole cowlick widow's peak is totally gray.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And it's just right there too.
Wait, but that's like a skunk thing.
Thank you, Esmeralda.
No,
we can break.
This is just
a
world full of compliments for how I look today.
No, but that's like a cool thing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Not when you're in theater. Not when you're trying to get hired. Not when you got to know. Second City's got to know you're under 30 if they're going to put you on stage.
Let me see if I need men in anywhere. More after this on 720.
Listen, I stand with me brethren. At the top of the pit, they dye me black, but I come back like they are red. I'm a true shatter, unruly and unwily.
This is Hank Williams III.
Oddly enough. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio with one of the founders, creators, masterminds behind Vamp, a music comedy drinking show, Friday and Saturday nights at MCL. They've added an earlier show, a little more of a laid-back, low-key cabaret version.
It is. It's for your 8 o'clock crowd. The, mm-hmm. You know, I'm not trying to stay up till 10:30 and drink with a bunch of bros. Well, then I've got a show for you.
And this is a great way to celebrate if you've got like a birthday party or a bachelorette. This is even better than any other bachelorette situation, I think.
Absolutely. We're very big on the knot on mywedding.com. A lot of they're calling them indie weddings.
Yeah.
Trying to do something new instead of just the same old, same old. And we've had a lot of success with that. We do home buyouts. We'll travel to you. It's one of our favorite crowds to play for because they're so excited and happy and want to laugh. And how much fun is that? And, you know, we'll definitely pull you up on stage and give you a hard time. And mm-hmm. You can find all of this out and more at www.vampchicago.com.
Very cool. I have not had a chance. I keep like there have been Saturday nights where I'm like, I should just go see, I have time to go see Vamp right now. I think Sketchfest kind of took it out of a lot of people that were involved.
It sure did.
I'm still recovering. I mean, I saw a lot of shows. I saw about probably 20 some shows mm-hmm. while I was there. It was very fun.
It's intense. It is the coolest because it is literally I hate the overuse of that word, but it is literally the largest sketch comedy festival in the world.
Yeah, I have to call Brian Posen because I think he's got something going on Tuesday nights. I don't know why he's not asked me to promote that. I think there are some women's shows on Tuesday nights that you guys have. No, it's Stage 773.
I mean, Pose has got his hand in 800 pies.
That's
so I can't
true.
I mean, I work for the man, but I can't keep up.
I'm full on pizza, but now I want pie. Oh, we have chocolate in our office, by the way. My husband bought so much chocolate for me this weekend. Like, I just came home from Texas.
Oh, for Valentine's Day.
For Valentine's Day.
That's how single I am.
How were your Valentine's Days, by the way? Because I had a friend of mine text me something yesterday. Like, my husband sent me a Valentine's. And then my friend Charles, a regular on the show, texted me something about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. I was like, happy Valentine's to you, too. Like, I Valentine's all my friends, too. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
My Valentine's was amazing.
It was.
Because this was the first year that my wife and I agreed to do nothing, which was great. We're at the six-year mark in our relationship, the mm-hmm. three-year mark in our marriage. And I told her, like, I'll do anything. I took her out to dinner the day before, actually. So, like, that was kind of a Valentine's Day thing.
Right.
But actually, yesterday, we stayed in, we watched movies, and we did nothing.
That's
so you
a good
both
Valentine's.
Honored it. Because
yes.
A lot of times you hear couples like, well, we weren't going to get anything
right.
for Christmas, but I got you this. I'm like, oh, come on.
Because well, men actually, often feel like they're being tricked when she says, no, yep. don't worry, but don't buy me anything.
I actually break that rule typically. For Christmas, the last 2 years in a row, I got her something when she said not to. But I listened this time, and it was, even though I took her out to dinner again on Saturday. But still. Other than that, I listened.
Yeah, but you should, like, taking her out for dinner should just be a normal occasion.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Esmeralda, did you get to do anything for Valentine's Day?
I did. I was supposed to go to the, because it's Chinese New Year.
Mm-hmm.
We were supposed to go to the parade. It was snowing, and we just kind of missed it because we were trying to get there, and it was snowing.
And you decided to cuddle instead?
No, we went, but we kind of just walked around for a little bit, and then we went instead to Pleasant House Bakery and had British pies. I know, they're delicious.
Like mincemeat and stuff, or what?
Yeah.
Yes.
So there was a steak and ale. We had a steak and ale, and then I had a kale and mushroom pie. It was super delicious.
Where is this?
This is at 31st and Morgan in Bridgeport.
Excellent.
And then we had a beer next door at Maria's Packaged Goods.
Can I just say real quick?
And we played Battleship.
I'm so sorry you were forced to eat that pie, Esmeralda. That sounds just awful.
She played Battleship.
No,
you're missing
that,
you.
Was this shut
like,
your mouth.
Was this so like terrible. Guthrie's? Was you this like Guthrie's where they have all the board games?
No. They just had a few. And we were just there. We're like, we want to play Battleship? Okay. And I kicked his butt.
Nice.
And then we played Connect Four. And then he kicked my butt royally.
Very
but it was like
games.
A lovely, it was a lovely little game. And
that sounds like
day.
Fun. So yeah, I'm the only one in this day. Studio right now repping the singlehood.
Yes. You did nothing? Did you say happy Valentine's to any of your girlfriends? I mean, like, friends that are women?
Oh, of course. From of Vamp course. All my beautiful, I have like 1.5 best male friends. All my friends are women.
Yeah. No, you have some great, great people you work with.
I am so blessed to have the friends that I do. And you know, I teched a show at 773 called The Living Room, which if you're into solo stories, you should really check out.
Whose show is this?
Laura Korn and a guy named Ian something. They produce it. It's their project. It's their baby. And they go the third week. They're once a month. That's what I'm going to tell you, on Sunday nights. You should really check them out. They're on Facebook and Twitter. The Living Room is what they're called.
The Living
beautiful,
Room.
Beautiful solo pieces and solo stories. But I teched that show and had a good time with them. And then I went home and I watched The Walking Dead.
Oh, I don't watch Walking Dead, but a lot of people were very excited that show was back yesterday.
My goodness. Anything dystopian I'm into. I also watched the new Vinyl that came out. It's the new HBO
How
series.
Do you like that? I like the lead actor in that.
Yeah, he's good. You know, my only problem with it, I will say that
by the way, the
good.
70s, dystopia. Go ahead. It is kind of, isn't it?
Well, it is different. The one issue I had is they featured Zeppelin, like this recording contractor, producer, whatever's trying to get Zeppelin in there. But they clearly did not get the rights to use Zeppelin's music, as most people don't. So you hear in the background like a very awfully different version of like of their songs and stuff. But then, you know, they had the public domain stuff, like Iron Man was in there. But that, as a huge Zeppelin fan, as a huge rock fan, if you're going to go balls to the wall all about rock and roll, because that's what they're all about, like how the 50s and 60s became the 70s in the rock and roll world, get the rights or choose a different band. You know what I mean? AC/DC and Zeppelin are off limits. You know they're not going to do it. So pick somebody else.
Don't even pretend that it's
otherwise, it's a good show, though.
Oh, well, there you go. I have no shows, really. Good Wife is in its final season, by the way, so that's coming to an end.
What about The Flash? Aren't you still watching The Flash?
It is so good.
I'm watching Arrow. I'll watch Arrow, Agent Carter.
Arrow is...
Muppets.
Third on
The Flash main. The guy who plays Barry. I can't do it.
Why?
I love comic book stuff. I have your
you
back,
saying?
Man. I have
he
your back.
He is a Barry Allen.
No.
Yes, he is.
He's a bad actor is what he is.
Oh.
Hey, is there a reason why he looks like Doctor Who in the commercials?
Ooh, interesting.
Grant Gustin, or however you say his
he
name.
He looks like the 10th Doctor a little bit, doesn't
he?
He looks like David Tennant.
Well, no, he's wearing glasses, and he's all old-timey looking.
Well, they're going to travel through time.
Oh, is that what's
going
on?
Yeah, he's like real fast, Esmeralda.
Then there's like an alternate universe. And
Flash is by far the best superhero show on TV right now.
Are you guys
by far?
Whoa, Daredevil, first off.
No, that's not on television. That would be
on Netflix.
Oh, I forget what TV is.
Yeah.
I just listen to WGN radio
Fair
and
enough.
Watch Netflix.
Do, yeah. Fair enough. Point made.
Are you guys Whovians?
No.
Okay, cool. Because I don't get it.
I mean, I'm sorry I say that out loud because my son and my husband are very much into Doctor Who.
It's Camp City, USA.
Well, they change the rules all the time is kind of one of my problems, which is why I think Flash bothers me so much, Craig. I feel like, and even Arrow does that too.
They have changed no rules in Flash.
They make up rules
tomorrow,
as they go.
Okay. They're making up a lot of rules.
Yeah.
But in Flash, they're trying to have some sort of...
consistency?
Yes, I believe that's what's happening.
Okay, sure.
I also don't like the bad guy.
As they travel through time. Which bad guy?
The bad, the like, Reverse Flash.
There's a different one. No, Reverse Flash isn't the bad guy anymore.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, see, I stopped watching.
Zoom is the bad guy.
I didn't like him in Scrubs, and I don't like
him
now.
From the comic book, Zoom is actually also... You don't like Tom Cavanaugh as an actor?
I don't like Tom Cavanaugh.
Neither of you like Tom Cavanaugh. I would love to be Tom Cavanaugh. Ed was an amazing TV show. I loved that show. He starred in that.
He was annoying as Dr. Scrubs Doctor. What was
He was the older brother of J.D.
He does look like Zach Braff. Yeah. He did, they did. That was a good casting move.
He was perfectly annoying, though. Wasn't his character supposed to be annoying?
Yes.
Yeah. So he was wonderfully annoying in that.
Well, that's typecasting. That's like how Keanu Reeves was so good in The Matrix.
Because he's an idiot.
See, that all works out very well. I see what happens. I like. Are you watching Agent Carter?
Yeah, I love Agent Carter.
I thought that was a movie.
No, it's a limited series.
Second season.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm picturing like a woolly mammoth. What am I thinking of?
Agent Carter, she's amazing.
I think there's only a couple episodes left of Agent Carter, too. Yeah,
I think you're right. Mm-hmm. They tried to do a little bit of, a multiracial and interracial relationship
they
on
did.
The show.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And now he's a ghost.
I know. It's a little sad.
That's not great.
What are the shows? Esmeralda, what are you watching?
The last thing I watched was that on Netflix, that Chelsea Handler thing.
Oh, yeah. How was that? Chelsea Does or something like that?
Right. Mm-hmm. I've watched all of them except the one where she goes to Silicon Valley.
It's a series?
That looks boring. It's a like a 4-part thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was cool.
All right. Yeah, I don't watch Chelsea. But,
all right. Fine. All right.
I've never seen anything she's done before this.
You never saw Chelsea lately?
Right. Yeah, no, I never watched it.
Yeah, me neither.
But I was like, oh, that's neat. She's doing like, it's documentary kind of style.
Oh, that sounds a little more fun, I guess. I've been watching The Unbreakable what's her name?
Kimmy Schmidt.
Kimmy Schmidt.
The Unbreakable Kimmy
Schmidt.
How many
you
episodes
got into the
are you
Pinot
in?
Noir.
Pinot Noir, shining star.
I still can't get over the fact that she lost all of her money in the first episode. I keep wanting her to find that backpack.
No. That's not Kimmy Schmidt. Our lovable Kimmy Schmidt does not succeed. Not
she stays positive in the face of adversity.
Uh-huh.
Is it positive or just unaware? More after this on 720 WGN.
We didn't have time for it. We didn't have time to talk about it. It did not make the show. It had to go. Maybe next time. I don't know. This is the end of the show. We gotta go. The end of the show.
Craig, I think that that Brandon has already thrown something out. What did you crack your shoulder? What did you just do there?
I'm getting old, Craig.
I've lost the will to. I like playing the music. I think that we have to pick one night a week where we go all out. But I think that we're taking a little bit. Did you break your chair?
I'm in a different chair.
Yeah, what happened?
I've lost my chair.
I think we learned something tonight, folks.
He's like chin level with the counter. I don't know.
Yeah, now I'm a lot shorter.
What happened there?
I don't know. I was ready to go tonight, actually, so I'm a little disappointed.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Subwoofer in here. That would make me
Thursday.
Dance harder.
Save it for Thursday.
Thursday. Yeah, it's good.
I've been doing cardio bar when I was in San Antonio, which is angry ballet. It's very angry ballet. It never stops. It's 60 minutes of sustained movement. And it hurts a lot. And then I did stairs. I did 120 stairs on Saturday. So I think I should stretch my calves a little bit more.
One time we did 20 stairs together, and that was it for me. I experienced it. I tried it. Try everything twice in this world. I fully believe that.
Well, you've only done the stairs once, so we have to do the stairs at me.
Two flights of stairs, 20 stairs. That's twice.
That is correct.
Fair enough.
That's the math I use.
Are you building up for your stair climb coming up?
No, I am not training at all for that. That is not, I don't know if I'm doing a good job or a bad job, but I have no preparation whatsoever.
I would say just doing a few more times in the Tribune Tower.
Okay.
You'll feel, even when you arrive at the Presidential Towers on March 6th for the American Lung Association Fight for Air Climb, you'll feel prepared because the stair flights, they're shorter. Mm-hmm. The risers are not as high. So you'll feel like, oh, I almost overtrained for this.
Is this lung cancer or all?
The American Lung Association. So it's all respiratory diseases.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So I started climbing last year, and it was one of those things where there were so many great people, and obviously there are other people who have lost family members. My father died of small cell lung cancer in 2001. Lung cancer is one of those things where people kind of feel like, well, you're to blame for it. And nobody deserves to suffer that way. And, nicotine is an addiction. It's something that we still battle with and try to, oh, Brandon, I'm not shaming you.
No,
it truly is an addiction. But it's also something that, people who love you would never want to see you suffer. And so they're always trying to find cures and they're educating and helping people find better breath health.
Very cool. Can I pimp a charity real quick?
Please.
Vamp just started with the Michael J. Fox Foundation.
That's spectacular.
Yeah, three of the four board members' families have been affected. My grandmother and my grandfather on my other side, who passed away from it after 20 years. My grandmother's had it for, it's very terminal at this point.
Parkinson's is what we're talking about.
Yeah, Parkinson's, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Absolutely. So we started, you can actually go to Vamp Chicago very soon and get a link to our personal page. We will have a donation box at the theater, and part of all of our proceeds will go to it. So whether it's American Lung Association or the Michael J. Fox Foundation, I just think it's so important for people to champion stuff like that, because it's just, you don't normally think about it. And for me, specifically, I think about Parkinson's because it's affected me, but I don't spend a lot of time thinking about lung cancer. Mm-hmm. I buy a pack of Camels every day. Like, you know what I mean? So we're raising that awareness is just so cool. And we're really excited to be a part of it. And I'm really excited to watch Craig climb 100 stairs for it.
Uh-huh. 180 floors.
Probably going to happen.
Wait,
I mean,
I'm going to
show
what?
Up and I'm going to walk them.
There's four buildings.
Oh, okay. I was like, there's no building in the world that has 180 floors.
Four buildings, 45 floors each. You can climb one, two, three, or all four. Or you can also pledge and support any team that you want. But we invite you to join us at WGN Radio. You can go to fightforairclimb.org and support the team of your choice.
Is it like I have to pledge to Craig to give a dollar for every stair he makes?
No.
Yeah, I think you just give me an amount of money, and then I do the stairs I can do. And that's up to me.
I feel like I'm not training as much this year as I did last year.
Yeah, no, I don't think any of us are training. Well, Stephanie is training a lot.
Has been working really hard.
When is this going down?
March 6th.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's getting closer Sunday. And closer all the time.
Yes, and also it'll be right on the heels of my return from Camp Pendleton. I'm going to Marine Corps boot camp for
a week.
Yeah, you're going to be training hard then.
What's the extent of that, like how similar to an actual week in the Marine boot camp is that?
I think it will be very light. Mm-hmm. Essence of just sort of, there'll be some of the the obstacle courses. We're going to be doing the firing range.
Cool.
I will be doing some of the exercises, but for the most part we're going to learn about how the Marines train, what it takes to become a Marine, and we're going to talk to some of the recruits, find out what drew them to service in the military.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
And so I'll be broadcasting from there for a week. Tomorrow night I'll be in Springfield for one night because the governor of Illinois is presenting his budget address. I had to stop before.
Oh, they're still talking about that, huh? I'm excited. I bet he's taking all this time to really figure something good out for the people.
Yeah, there's nothing good coming from that. Although, I wonder if there are any legislators who have not shown up for the last 6 years and gotten paid anyway, because there's a story that Craig sent me that this guy has not shown up for work for 6 years, continue to be paid, and nobody noticed.
A legislator?
No, I was saying, wouldn't it be funny?
Oh, just
if,
random humans.
No, I mean, you could argue that some of them are not showing up.
Yeah, but they have to. They have to like be present. They're all like present and accounted for here. Present.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. There's a guy out of Spain that I guess he thought to himself that he quit his job, so he stopped going.
And they
and
kept
for
sending
six
him
years.
Checks.
He didn't realize, so they just kept paying him money.
So he just never bothered to tell him.
You got to take their money back. Yeah. Why would you?
Do they want their money back?
I got to say, Patty, you go hard on the exercise. All your posts and stuff. I really admire that. I'm the guy that's like, well, this gut is my gut, so I'll just work just my arms and hopefully they'll stick out farther than the gut does.
Well, you've seen that I put away two slices of delicious Lou Malnati's pizza. Thank you again, Lou Malnati's. I worked out. If I just cut in half like the kind of crap that I eat, mm-hmm. as far as like chocolate and perhaps maybe a little bit of the maybe a beer or a glass of wine, if I cut some of that out, I'd be in even better shape. But I kind of do all the other stuff to maintain my ability to eat.
Yeah, if I'm ever successful financially, which heads up, comedy is the way to go if you're looking for a lucrative lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
But I will pay someone to yell at me every time I eat something bad. A big, scary person.
By the way, just to go back to that story for a second, the reason they eventually found out that the person was no longer going to his job is because they tried to give him an award for 20 years of loyal and dedicated service, and they couldn't find him.
Yes.
They're like,
yes,
he's going to get an award. He's been here for 20 years. This guy is, wait, where is he?
Where did he work? What kind of company was this?
He's a civil servant.
Oh, my Lord.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Embarrassing. Just
España.
A little bit embarrassing. I'll be in Springfield. One of the things that the governor has promised is to try to get his turnaround agenda passed, at least have some negotiations on it. I have questions for so many people in Springfield tomorrow because there is a factory closing in Indiana that, you know, a lot of people here say, oh, we have to be like Indiana, be a better state for business. Mm-hmm. Here's a company that got all the tax breaks. they got the right to work. They, you know, they impeded the ability for right to bargain, collective bargaining. And the company is folding and taking all of the jobs to Mexico. So they got everything they wanted. Everything the governor is saying keeps businesses here. And it's still not enough. So I don't know. I don't know at what point. I mean, this company has been there since the 1950s. At what point? What is enough? They're making profits. At what point is enough enough? I know, Brandon. What would it take for you?
When you say enough enough, what do you...
Like, what kind of profits do you have to be making to go, you know what, it's worth to keep these jobs here? I don't know. Neither one of us make enough money to make those decisions, do we?
Money?
More after this on 720 WGN.